Okay, so today's topic again, assertiveness coaching. You may ask at this time, folks, why it is that we're going to study assertiveness training or coaching. Well, the reason for that is that as you get out there in the forest starting to work with more and more clients, you're going to come to realize very quickly that many individuals do not know the difference between assertiveness and aggression. And therefore, they're not getting their needs met. So it's important that as a coach you come to a place where you make sure that you work with your client to know what the difference is between assertiveness and aggression, and that you help them in working toward the right kind of steps to get what it is they want or desire. So that's why we're studying that today, because at some point in time, we're all going to be sharing the difference between assertiveness and aggression with a client. So let's just talk about assertiveness as it's defined. So as we've already discussed when we were talking about penguins before we started this lesson, the Penguin English Dictionary defines assertiveness as pushing oneself forward aggressively. And this is precisely the problem that many individuals see with assertiveness, is because they see it as aggression. So let's be clear about this before we start. Assertion is not aggression. In fact, assertiveness is simply a case of making a positive effort to have one's needs met. Assertion is a behavior, a healthy behavior, and aggression is not. So behavior can be divided into three modalities. Now, some of this you're going to be able to read with me because we've left it in your crib notes. So it can be divided into three modalities: aggressive, assertive, and passive. Essentially, aggression includes the following things: being overly competitive, being loud, belittling others, being offensive, being judgmental or critical of others, being impatient or irritable, and being violent or abusive. Can anyone think of any other examples of aggression?
What about overly challenging?
In what respect? Challenging someone's ideals or thoughts or...
Yeah, challenging, mm-hmm. Almost in an obnoxious way or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How about getting physical?
Yep. Anyone else?
Like argumentative? Like very
argumentative? Sure. Absolutely.
There's also very manipulative, mm-hmm. in an unhealthy way.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes people can be so manipulative you can see it.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even know how to do it sort of candidly. It's really quite...
It's out there.
It's right out there. Yeah, it's in your face. Anyone else?
I guess being quietly obstinate could very well be aggression at times.
Absolutely it can. That's quite right, Michael. So key phrases of aggression would include phrases like "you'd better" or "else." We've all heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Or "just do it." Or even something short and to the point like "shut up." Those are all key phrases of aggression. So to be passive includes the following types of behavior. So as we go through this, see if you can think of others as we go through this list. So passive behaviors would include being anxious to please. We all know that one. We've seen people like that. Probably our moms. Avoiding conflict. Avoiding decision-making. Self-blame or self-criticism. Rejection of compliments. Frequent apologizing. That can drive you crazy. Low self-esteem, putting yourself last, keeping quiet, that's kind of what you were saying, Michael, only in the opposite direction, and feeling unconfident or weak. Anybody think of anything else that might be considered passive in types of behavior?
How about complacent?
Mm-hmm.
Looking down when talking?
Sure.
Frequently crying?
Yep.
Overly agreeable?
Overly agreeable, yeah.
Oh. Willing to please?
Willing to please?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they're not really anxious about it. They're just willing to jump in there if they have to?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
Anyone else?
How about being a victim?
Being a victim, sure.
Yeah.
We see that a lot, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have people like that in our lives. We see that a lot.
Or
so
always
passive,
being in agreement.
Sorry?
Always being in agreement, even if they don't really agree, but they pretend they do.
Pretend
like
to be in agreement? Mm-hmm.
Falsely agreement, you know, falsely agreeing with someone.
Sure.
They don't want to create waves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Can see a lot of that, too.
A need passive. To be accepted? How's that?
Need to be what?
Accepted?
Accepted? Sure. Absolutely. You may find that one particularly interesting as you get out there in the field more, because you will find that one quite a bit.
Yes.
Passive keywords are like sorry, or would you mind if I blank blank, or I'm sorry you're right, etc. Words like that are passive keywords that you will often hear as a sign to you as the coach that something needs to be addressed. Let's talk for a moment about assertive behavior. And as we go through these, try and think about some other examples, if you will. So assertive behavior includes some of the following. Listening to others. It can be done in an assertive way. Stating your needs clearly. Expressing feelings appropriately. Coping positively with disagreements. That's an art all to itself.
Mm-hmm. Coping positively.
Coping positively with disagreements. So you're not going to let the disagreement get the better of you.
Okay.
You're just going to keep a positive self feeling about the disagreement and move on.
Yeah.
You're not going to make a big thing about it.
Okay.
Being trustworthy. And taking responsibility. I like to put the word personal responsibility in there.
Oh, yeah.
Taking personal responsibility is assertive behavior. So when we think about assertive keywords, we would find that these words would include words like I think, or I believe, or I understand your viewpoint. In other words, we're not going to be critical of the disagreement. We're just saying I understand your viewpoint. And I really need to blank, 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 whatever that might be. So those are all examples of assertive keywords. These are both examples of the passive and the assertive that you might want to just sort of keep in hand in your notebook so that when you're talking about assertiveness with your client who is not yet at a place where he or she finds herself or himself to be assertive, that you'll be able to give examples like that, because once you hear those things, the client will understand immediately what you mean when you say to use assertive words is to use words like I think, you're taking ownership, I believe, I understand your viewpoint. So try to keep those at hand so that if you need to go into an explanation of what passive words would be like and what assertive words or sentences would be like, that you can give examples. Most of us experience a combination of all three of the behaviors, as we have areas in our lives in which we sort of feel less comfortable or find certain things irritating. So we will move through these three different aspects at different times. The role of an assertiveness coach, not that any of you may be deciding to strictly be an assertiveness coach, but as taking assertiveness as part of your role as a coach, your job is to encourage the client to be assertive in as many areas of their life as possible. Life is not black and white, as having to be the top dog or the underdog. There are many shades of black and white and grays in between. There's a middle path where we can respect the feelings, the rights, and the needs of both others and ourselves, and that's where we want to have our client be. The equality is the hallmark of assertive behavior. The equality is the hallmark of the assertive behavior. If the client and yourself and all of us could get to that place, we'd all be much happier. So there are three different ways. Let's talk about this. There's three different ways. I kind of like this analogy. There's three different ways of making a complaint in a restaurant. So an aggressive way of making a complaint in a restaurant might be, I'm not eating this. There's a blankety-blank fly in it. A passive way of saying that might be, excuse me, I'm really sorry to bother you, but I normally don't make a fuss, but there seems to be a fly in my soup. I'm ever so sorry to mention it. Sorry. An assertive way to address that in a restaurant might be to say, excuse me, I have a fly in my soup. Would you please replace it for me? Thank you. All very different, and all will bring about a different reaction. The aggressive customer will not doubt cause a scene. Sorry, will no doubt cause a scene. They will usually cause embarrassment with the people they're with and to others sitting around who will be embarrassed just by the spectacle. And in likelihood, they'll ruin the evening for everyone with their aggression. The passive customer will probably remain red-faced and feel guilty for the most part and throughout the evening for even mentioning that there was a fly in their soup. The assertive customer will receive just what was required and will move on to enjoy the remainder of the evening. So, what do you think about that?
I agree with you 100%, Dr. Bronze. Unfortunately, I meet many people who mistake assertiveness for aggression.
Absolutely. They do. We'll talk about that here as well. They
okay,
do.
Good.
Because they don't. They just don't see a difference. They just don't
see
a difference.
No, they don't.
No.
Well, a really passive person would probably eat the fly.
That's true. I think we should put that in there. Passive one and passive two. You're absolutely right. Was that Dory?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They probably would. You wouldn't even find it sitting in the bottom of the bowl when they're done.
No.
Yeah.
They would say thanks for the extra protein.
Well, that would not be me, just so you know. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you. That's probably very true. Clarity and directness are not the same as bluntness and rudeness. So clarity and directness is indeed assertiveness. Bluntness and rudeness can be considered, and usually is considered, aggression. So the key to assertiveness is making clear what is required and then strictly to it without failing, go for it, what you want, just lay it down without being provoking and not to be wavering in any way. Being provoked is a common throwback to assertiveness, and provoking generally takes one of three forms. So let's go through them. What are three forms of provoking? Well, what are three forms of being provoked? What would they be? Argumentative provoking is one. Manipulative provoking is two. And what's the third one? Is it written for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Irrelevant logic provoking. What do you think of that one?
Well, I've had an experience of that.
Who said that?
Evelyn.
Hi, Evelyn. What is your experience with that?
Well, in my day job, I'm a town manager.
Mm-hmm.
And a neighbor of mine had a house that they were going to replace the porch.
And we have ordinances in town, and so I said, you can do that without a building permit. Of course, she came to me and asked me about it, and I said that you could replace what is existing. No more, but you don't need a building permit to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the new porch is 2 feet bigger than the old porch is, and so I had sent her, as the town manager, I sent her an email that said that I'm going to need to report this to the code enforcement officer. And when I called her as a neighbor and feeling probably not in a good place because I felt put in a position that I should not have been,
mm-hmm.
as someone who purports to be my friend, and I said, what, you know, why did you get the email from the town manager? And so she said, yes, I did. I says, what were you thinking? And so she said, well, I'm not a builder. And I said, what does that have to do with anything? She said, well, I guess I'll have to deal with the code enforcement officer. I'm not a builder. And I guess my experience was I just said to her, I says, well, what does that have to do with the cost of tea in China? Because that's how I felt that the response was to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, well, I'm not a builder. And it doesn't make any sense to me. So to me, that's an example of irrelevant logic.
Mm-hmm. That just is trying to provoke a response for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So argumentative provoking includes such statements as, if you don't like the way I do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Manipulative provoking would include something like, you know how much I hate having to do this, so it's unfair. Irrelevant logic would include something like, if you did it yourself, you'd be sure it would be done the way that you want it. Gotta laugh, we've all heard that.
Well, I want to go back to the difference between directness and bluntness.
Sure.
What is it?
Oh. Let's go back in our notes. I have to find it on my screen, so let's go back. We're going to go back and see what it said there. Being direct is just telling exactly, well, I can't find it here, but it doesn't matter. Being direct is stating the facts the way they are. Being blunt is usually done in a way that is put forth in a manner that does not allow someone to respond in a healthy way. It's put forth with aggression. Being blunt is usually a form of aggression in most circumstances. I mean, I have heard the odd blunt person that I've known over time that I understand that their way of speaking is quite blunt and they're not trying to provoke any issues. But if you don't know the person well, oftentimes just cut and dried bluntness that is said with a little bit of a stern tone in the voice or a slight look of the eye can be taken for aggression. In other words, this is the way it is. Don't cross the line. We've talked about it. This is it.
That was one of the things that I was going to interject was, I think the tone of the voice often has a lot to do with which way these things fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there are some people who can be somewhat provoking, and you think they're being provoking, but the tone of the voice says they're not. And in a way, that's a type of manipulation as well. They're just sort of covertly being provoking and blunt, and yet you think that you hear it, but you're not really sure. Do you know what I mean, Michael?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm, I do.
That can also be when it comes to sort of combining the passive-aggressive person, too, where they're saying something to try and, but trying to be really nice and sugarcoat it with tone or...
Or gravy, as we learned.
Yeah, or gravy, right? Or that. But there's that aggressiveness towards what they're actually trying to say, which can actually be more cutting in a way, too.
Absolutely.
And I would agree with Michael, too. It's tone, but it's also that body language thing that if you were coaching someone, be important to, if they're having problems, to see how they're coming across, because they may not even be aware of their demeanor and how they look or present themselves, even if they're thinking they're being... you know, assertive, and they actually can sound quite off-putting.
Yes, of course. And, you know, if we talk to others about being blunt, I mean, if we just say to each other in conversation with friends, what do you think about someone who's blunt? Normally the reaction is quite negative.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
If you use the word blunt, it just brings up a negative connotation for you. if you say, if you use the word, you know,
direct
or she's just forthright when she speaks. She speaks her mind and she's forthright about it. That doesn't usually bring up negative connotations. Blunt does. And usually I think it's because blunt has that combination of stance and physical, the physical look to the body, as well as the physical action that's happening with the face or the rolling of the eyes or something. Usually we sort of feel that there's a combination of those things when we think about someone being blunt. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Does that help you, Dori?
Well, it does, but I can also use the same argument for directness.
Sure. You can.
Well, I mean, I think it's the way you present it.
It is the way you present it, and what we're trying to really talk about here is to make sure that we're presenting ourselves to get what we want rather than what we're going to be given. So we're trying to see where the client is, see what needs to be directed in the way of change so that the client is getting what they want. If the client is blunt and rolls their eyes and sort of stands a little to the side with a hand on the hip when they give their opinion, chances are they're not going to get anywhere at work when they're seeking the promotion. It's just not going to happen. So
blunt doesn't allow for any dialogue or cooperation is the way I see it.
Who is that? Is that
Barry?
Yeah, Barry, I agree. It just sort of is, here's the case, there it is, we're done. And
right.
Although there's some, pardon me?
I think being direct still can allow for some cooperative dialogue between the two parties.
Sure, just in the way it's presented, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, in the way we stand, in the way we use the tone of our voice. So there are grays in between, Dori, to get back to your question. There are many grays in between, but we want to make sure that we're being somewhere in the middle, that we're going to get our needs met instead of causing further difficulties with people who may be those who are in power to assist us in getting to where we want to be. So that's really what this is all about. So the difficulty will arise then as soon as provoking is responded to. So as you can understand, if someone says something that sounds provoking and then that is responded to, then things start to escalate. The provoking comment is the bait, really, in other words, and you can easily be hooked. And once you're hooked, that's it. It's just sort of a spiraling action that happens. So let's return for a moment back to the waiter. There's a fly in my soup. The waiter may provoke with such comments as saying, I'm too busy, or I'm really short-staffed right now, you'll have to just wait a moment, or just plain flat-out, you'll have to wait. Now, even if the waiter were to say it in a calm, non-argumentative way, you'll have to wait, chances are that the customer is not going to be happy. Do you really want to be eating your soup, your new bowl of soup, when everyone else has finished dinner?
Right.
So no matter how the waiter would state this, really, it is a form of provoking action there. So the solution is to field an assertive response in this manner, perhaps. And this is only an example. I'm not saying this is what you would do. I appreciate that you are busy and under pressure and short-staffed at this time, but I still want you to replace my soup, please. The waiter will eventually get the message that whether he's good-natured or whether he's sulky or whether he's having a good day or a bad day, he is going to get the message that the customer really wants that replacement bowl of soup to get his needs or her needs met. Correct?
Yep.
So the solution is to field the assertive response in that manner. That would help very well. It's important to understand the matter of problem ownership as related to asserting the need. So the problem of the fly in the soup is initially the customer's problem, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got the soup, you got the fly. The customer then asserts his or her right to have the soup fly free, so to speak. And it probably can't fly free because it's got wet wings, but you know what I meant. It sounds funny in that sentence. but clearly stating his requirement to the waiter and maintaining his or her stance, the customer has transferred the problem now from his or herself to the waiter, where it rightly belongs. It's now up to the waiter to deal effectively with the problem. Aggression, of course, means never accepting the problem, usually, and passively, it means taking no additional problems on. So let's just look at the fundamental rights that we all have as human beings, just moving ahead for a moment. So the fundamental human rights are, now we probably have more, but here's a few set up for you. Whether we are men, women, or children, we all have the following rights. To state our needs. To set priorities based on our needs.
God, I'm sorry. That's my phone doing something weird.
That's okay. Everybody still here okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Perfect. Okay. Number three would be to be treated with respect. To be respected as an equal human being. To express our feelings. We all have that right. To express our values and our opinions. To say yes or no for ourselves in any situation is really our right. To make mistakes is also our right. To change our mind is a right. To say I don't understand is our right. To ask for what we want, absolutely our right. To decline responsibility for the problems of others, not to take them on, is absolutely our right. And finally, to interact with other people without needing their approval is our right. Can anyone think of anything else that should be added to that list?
To choose for ourselves the path of our life.
Sure. You alone should decide where your path is going. Anyone else? Well, it's the last one on the list that gives us the most difficulty usually. Instinctively, we often look to other people to like and approve of us. Generally, that's what we do as human beings until we learn differently. We have an inherent need to be acceptable to others. This is our human nature usually. In fact, the more we are concerned about others' opinions of us, the less we tend to value ourselves. So with assertiveness comes less of a need to be acceptable to others and more of a sense of being comfortable in accepting ourselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Can anyone think of a nice, short way to put that encapsulated?
Yes. To be able to feel comfortable in one's own skin.
Sure, I like that one. Anyone else? We're all happy and good with that one. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I actually like that one a lot. Let's talk for a moment about body language. 55% of our summing up the other person is based on appearance. 37% is based on mannerisms and tone of voice, and only 8% is actual verbal content.
The first one is what?
What was the first one again?
55% of our summing a person up, basically our overall summing up of an individual,
okay,
is based on appearance. So 55% is based on appearance.
Okay.
37% is based on mannerisms and tone of voice. And only 8% is actual verbal content.
Wow.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. This is Amy J. I understand that, and I see the patterns in that, and, you know, assessing other people and where that comes from, but how do they actually come up with those numbers?
You know, I've looked on the internet extensively through by just doing a search for that,
mm-hmm.
and because I wondered about that myself, and I have mm-hmm. found varying degrees. I don't know how they do their research particularly on that. I found slightly different percentages of those three,
mm-hmm.
but they
mm-hmm.
were very close. I think I found one that, for summing up the other individual, was something like 53%, and the others were very close as well. But I found that everywhere that I searched, it was really close. How they come up with those figures, I'm not really sure.
Surveys.
I can't
there
tell you.
There are surveys. We've seen some virtual surveys where they show, like, people's faces, and you have to click responses just based on different questions that they ask you, and it kind of gives you, it's so fast that you really don't have time to process it. It's just
I'd love to do that.
So
I would love to do that.
So it
okay,
is like
so
surveys.
Is that how they base those? Was that Evelyn or was that Jackie?
Jackie. It was Jackie.
Okay, Jackie, where would we find something like that?
I know there was a thing, there was a website. I'll have to see if we still have it. And we'll get it over to you. It was
Would
a website
you?
That they had sent out. I'll try to see if we can remember where we had that.
Right. The information that I gleaned was just going out, and they just gave some kind of a questionnaire to people. Like, that's how I found that they did it. I have heard of other forms of slightly different than what you've just said, Jackie, but I haven't heard of anything where they would actually be clicking so quick by just looking at a picture. So I would like to know about that. Amy, does that sort of answer your question? Does that help?
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So we all know what an aggressive person looks like for the most part, and usually they are full of tension and ready to fight. I mean, we know it when we see it. We know that their mannerisms and tone of voice, we know what those are generally. They tend to be perhaps argumentative, and their voice tends to be a little bit hard. By this point, it doesn't really matter what we say when we run into someone who's argumentative and we've heard that tone of voice and it's coming at us. Doesn't matter. We're ready and primed to receive some kind of verbal attack. We just know usually instinctively when it's coming. So looking at the body language, that's something that you really want to address with a client if they're looking particularly to move up within their own company that they're working in. If they want to stay where they are with the company and they want to move up, you want to make sure that to some degree you are addressing those three things, that you are addressing the 55% that's based on appearance, the 37% that's based on mannerisms, and the 8% that's also based on verbal content. Just address it in some way. It doesn't have to be, you know, any mathematical figure that you do. Just touch base with the client and help them to understand that all these three things factor in to some degree of how they're perceived at the workplace and by other people in general.
I know that one of the things that they've also done studies on is the difference between men and women's voice, and that women, not always, but tend to go up at the end of a sentence like that, and that tends to make women sound less confident. So that's something that also, if you're working with women, that they're trying to sound more assertive, or that's one of the things in their voice that can make them sound less so.
I love that. Will you put that on the message board? Was that Susan?
Yes.
Yep, I agree with you totally with that. Mm-hmm. And it tends to make women sound like they're asking a question rather than making a point.
Right.
And
they also shown that British people, because we sound, you know how they say that British people, they can swear and it sounds great? It's also because if you listen to them, they always come down at the end of a sentence.
Their
voice, it's also, so language is huge around of inflection and...
Yes.
More so than we actually realize.
They tend to throw away swear words.
Yeah, they do.
Right? They're just sort
it
of
sounds,
throw,
it sounds so lovely when they swear.
Yeah, they're kind of just tossed in there
right.
and thrown away, and you kind of like just sort of take it matter-of-factly, where
yeah.
we don't do that at
yeah.
all.
No.
I mean, if we're going to swear, we punctuate it.
Absolutely.
We make sure that everyone notices that
yeah.
we've just sworn, usually. You know, not that
Raina,
I swear.
Raina,
we don't
this
swear.
Is Michael.
Yes, Michael.
One thing that I wanted to note here, I've counseled executives on occasion, and you find an awful lot of times where they just have a particular rough manner and gruff voice, and it really doesn't have anything to do with what they say. I mean, it's just the way they are. They're aggressive, they're ego. Some of them are egomaniacs, I suppose, but it's just their way of presenting their issues. But
right.
If you don't listen to those issues, whether they're angry or, you know, emoting or whatever they're doing, then you're not going to communicate with them because that's how they communicate.
Right.
I just thought I'd throw that in because that's an aggressive group of people.
It certainly is, and, you know, you won't find them all to be that way, but the majority of them tend to be, and it's because they've come up through the ranks the hard way, usually. Most of them don't get into those positions just because jumped right in. You know, they come up, and they themselves have come across other people who are training them that basically do tell them, this is what you must do. You need to take the bull by the horns, and you need to be aggressive, and you need to get people to do. And so they do come up through the ranks that way, we find. But there are exceptions to the rule, of course. But thank you for that. So how does a person look and act assertively? Well, generally we could say that the posture should be tall and confident, not slouched, because slouching is usually passive or considered passive. And they shouldn't be looking threatening, because that would be considered aggressive. So they should look sort of, again, tall and confident and not slouched, shoulders back kind of thing, ready to state whatever they need to. The approach should be direct and not sidling. Now, sidling is an interesting word they use here. Sidling is sort of being passive, to creep or to slither, so you don't want to give that impression. And you don't want to be in your face. You don't want to be an in-your-face kind of person. That's considered aggression. So eye contact for someone who is being assertive should be direct. It shouldn't be shifty, so you shouldn't be looking all over the room, because if you're looking all over the room, that tends to be passive. And you should not be intimidating or look aggressive. In other words, raising an eyebrow, perhaps, or something like that. And the voice tone, perhaps, should be relaxed. It should be clear. Not whiny or mumbly kind of thing, because if you're whiny or mumbly, again, that's passive. It's considered passive. And certainly should not be sarcastic or hostile, because that is aggressive. And finally, the gestures that should be that should come along with the assertive act would be a relaxed and natural kind of gesture, not fidgety or nervous kind of thing, because that would be considered passive. And should not be confrontational. There shouldn't be large waving of the hands around the room, because that would be considered aggressive. And I know people who talk that way, and they just talk that way because that's what they do. And if you watch someone new in their presence, you do see that someone will kind of take a little step back because they're not sure what that's all about. So making sure that you look calm and relaxed, your hands should be free to move, your arms should be free to move somewhat, your elbows away from your body a little bit, but certainly we shouldn't be flailing our arms around, because that's going to take people, make a great big step backwards, which we don't want them to do. The more assertive person appears to be more effective, their communication is usually clear, and their self-presentation is usually quite good. So let's talk for a moment about saying no, because this is a big one for most people, and even for coaches. Saying no is tough. Many of us are brought up to feel that when we say no, that it will cause an offense. So we feel really that we should say yes. We don't want to offend anybody. We will therefore say yes in many situations, even when we don't want to. Something we absolutely don't want to do, we still say yes because we have this concern for approval by others. The refusal of something is often perceived by the person who wants to say no as being the following. So this is, if I want to say no to Michael saying, we need you there on Thursday night, Randon, I would be afraid maybe to say no to Michael because I'm afraid that I might appear to be callous. I might appear to be uncaring. I might appear to be mean or selfish. I might appear to be small-minded. I might appear to be petty. And finally, I might appear to be rude. And I wouldn't want to do that to Michael, so I would just say yes, even though everything in me wants to say no. And oftentimes, if we find the courage to say no, we pad it with excuses, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We've all heard that, you know, oh, I'd like to be there on Thursday night, Michael, but, you know, generally I go over to my mother's for dinner, and, you know, she doesn't take well to my changing the time and day, and I just don't think that'll work. I mean, we all have heard that. People do that because they just want to pad it. And that's certainly not the way we want our clients to be or ourselves to be. We want to be able to say no, to mean no, and say it in a way that's respectful and that honors the other person, but still makes your point clear and you're respecting yourself and your own needs. No hovering and dithering back and forth, no feeling uncomfortable or becoming anxious or red-faced, just simply stating your case. To be assertive means that if the requirement for our needs is to say no, that we can politely and firmly state that without worrying about causing offense. Why? Because if we have caused offense by just laying down the case, sorry, Michael, I can't do that on Thursday, I go to my mother's for dinner, but I'd be happy to do it another time. If that's caused offense to Michael, then that then becomes Michael's problem. I've not been rude, I've not been selfish, I've not been uncaring, and I've not been callous or any of those other things to Michael. I certainly haven't been rude, but I've stated the case that I cannot do that. I might even say, I'm really sorry, Michael, but the meeting that you'd like me to go to is just not something I'm interested in. Thank you for inviting me, though, but it's just not something I'd care to do. And again, saying that is not callous or uncaring or being mean or selfish or any of those other things. It's simply stating my case, and I certainly would keep my face fairly relaxed. I wouldn't raise an eyebrow. I wouldn't fidget. I wouldn't dither back and forth. I would just state my case so that Michael understands it's just not something I would want to do on Thursday night, but thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Braun.
Mm-hmm.
This Evelyn.
Yes, Evelyn.
There is really no reason why an excuse even needs to be given. If you're saying no to an engagement that you're unable to attend, you can just say, I'm sorry, I can't, you know, make that date. I have other commitments.
Absolutely. And if I don't have another engagement and I don't want to go, like, for instance, if it were the Thursday night dinner thing, I would say why I don't want to go if that was the honest case. If that were not and I didn't have a reason for not going, that's when I would say, I'm sorry, I just would prefer not to go. Thank you for the invite. It's just not something I'd care to do. But you're right. We do tend to add excuses sometimes we don't need to.
Right. Yeah.
I also, this is Jackie,
yes,
Dr. Jackie. I also, back when you were making the statement that when we were talking about finding the courage to say no and how we do pad it, one of the comments that you had made is that we need to honor other people, but we also need to honor ourselves. And by saying yes to things that we don't really want to do, we're not honoring ourselves. Therefore, we're not honoring others either.
That's right, and it's all tied in a circle, isn't it?
Yes.
If we're not honoring ourselves, indeed, we're not honoring the other people, and we are just making it up as we go and doing the best that we can so that we don't feel that we're stepping on anyone's toes when we're trying to state our own position and meet our own needs, which
right.
There's nothing
I think
wrong
a lot of times what we find is when you say a reason to someone, sometimes the reason we hesitate is because we're going to get well, it's just your mother, so, you know, you're going to get more rebuttal and stuff back from the other person because, again,
yep.
they're doing their whiff on what's in it for them and what they need. And so sometimes I think the reason that we try to justify our reason for it is out of not wanting to hear them tear down our reason for saying no.
Right. It's not good
yes,
enough.
Because if they do that, we have to come up with another one.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? we have to top the last reason. My mother doesn't have a phone, so I can't change the time of dinner.
Yeah.
Or something, right? We always have to, we feel like we have to top it. So
we have to, I think one of the, this is Evelyn again.
Yeah.
I think one of the things we have to learn for ourselves is by honoring ourselves, whether it's sitting in front of the tube on a Saturday night rather than go to some dinner engagement that maybe doesn't interest us, or whatever the case may be, to do it for the right reasons. And it's not, it's making sure that we're doing it not as a have to do something, but do it because we want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Whatever it is.
That's right. I agree with you. You know, and that's a growing experience, isn't it? I mean, you can probably all relate to this to some degree. We've all been in a place, and some of us still are, I'm sure, where we cannot say no without an excuse.
Yes.
Or feeling that we need to pad it in some way to make the excuse sound better than it really is.
Right.
You know, I need to stay home with Evelyn on Friday and watch TV because we're in the middle of a series, and if I miss part three, I won't know what's going on next week. You know, I mean, we would just feel like we would need to add that, right?
Right.
And I think we all can relate to this. It's something we are all learning on a day-to-day, you know, and certainly we all slide back from time to time. But it's an interesting thing to learn, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
What I hear you say, though, is with the examples that you've given, when you have used the examples, when you say no, you have further explained why you said no.
I do it myself if I have a reason, if I have a legitimate reason. If it's something that it's something I just don't want to do, then I don't do that. In other words, I would say to you, Dori, that no, I'm sorry, doing that on Thursday night with you, I'm just not interested. But thank you for inviting me. But if I really was busy doing something else, I would probably just say that as a matter of course because I'm being open.
I mean, somebody asked me, like, would you like to go to dinner? I mean, I feel very comfortable saying no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just leaving at that and not give an excuse.
Excellent.
And I would do the same, too. If I had no reason for doing something else, I would probably just say, no, not at this time, thank you. You know, or no, but of course,
there are many people who will come back and say, well, why?
Yes, there are.
Mm-hmm. And then,
and Dori, when that happens, what do you say? If I were to say, would you like to come to dinner with me on Thursday night? And you say no. And I said, well, why not?
And I said, because I don't want to.
Okay. Who laughed? Anyone else have another idea of why Dori might not want to go?
Because she has another commitment, even if that commitment is to herself sitting in front of the tube.
Sure,
you know?
she could say I have another commitment and doesn't have to say what it is.
Exactly.
Well, now, what if I'm persistent and say, well, what do you mean you have another commitment? What are you doing?
Yeah, and that's what happens when you come up with these, you know, further comments. People will, because people are not used to being said no to.
No, they're not.
Right.
No, they're not.
Well, that comes back to integrity, I think, because if you say yes and you don't mean it, then you're either going to cancel or you're going to do it and be resentful.
Yeah, we phone up the day before or the day of, the morning of, and say, I'm so sorry, I can't make it. I'm not feeling well.
Yeah.
Right?
I
do that.
Migraine.
Yeah. Got a migraine, yep. Yep, or you're right. Who said that we would feel resentful?
This is Julie.
Yeah, Julie, you're absolutely right.
I also think if someone's kind enough to extend you an invitation, to say no, kind of on the blunt end, I would at least say no, thank you for your invitation, but I'm not in right now. Or something,
right.
But at least say thank you, or I appreciate your offer, but no thank you.
So that would be good to say thank you, no.
What did you say, Dori?
I mean, you could say thank you,
but
no.
Yeah.
Right.
No thank you. And I think this also leads into when you reflect, when you say something back to someone and you're saying no, they take it personal, as if it's something personal to them.
Right. Like, why not?
You know, like, well, maybe they don't like me. Or so then the movie starts as to why you're saying no. And sometimes it's not personal. It's just you don't want to go.
Right, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
But it's not my job to take care of them.
No, it
you're
isn't.
Absolutely right.
that's their movie.
Yeah.
But Dr. Braun, doesn't it go back to a little earlier, you said it comes with experience? But
it does.
I also feel that, you know, within your own maturity, you get to the point where you don't feel like you need to make excuses.
Right.
Absolutely right.
Just go, you know, and keep moving.
And also with people within your general friendships, you get to know eventually how to deal with certain personality types in a certain way. And that is a growing experience. Oftentimes it's the hardest thing to make that first jump to say no with someone you don't know very well. And, you know, but we do come around to a place where we can do this and we can make it happen.
Well, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do in life was to say no.
Yeah,
wow.
It's very hard. It's very hard for all of us, I think. More so, I think, for women who, I mean, you know, I think most men don't have a problem being selfish and saying no. Women tend to be more the giving personalities, and oftentimes for them it's a harder lesson for them to learn than for men. And I don't mean to put everybody in a box, but that's just my own interpretation of how I see things through my experience.
A lot of it is the way we're brought up.
Certainly.
Yes.
My husband's the opposite. He doesn't like to say no to the kids. He doesn't want to see them upset or hurt. He tends to want to always make them happy.
Is that right?
No.
Is this Pam?
Yeah. No, it's Janet.
That's Janet. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I have a hard time because I want him to say no, and he doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to. Okay.
No.
But
I can't make
no.
him do what he won't do anyway.
Right. Okay, well, let's move on. We're almost at the top of the hour, and we haven't got through this yet. But we can talk for a moment about externalizing, because that can happen. Whenever we have a problem within a relationship, whether it is a personal or a professional level, human nature dictates that we externalize the problem. So we tend to blame the other person for the way we're feeling rather than taking on our own understanding for how we're feeling and taking our own personal
accountability.
View that we're feeling the way we're feeling because we're allowing ourselves to feel that way. So please read over that little bit about externalizing. It is clear that I've given you a few above examples there. I don't know whether you have them on that page, so maybe I shouldn't cut through this without looking. Let me just check your page here. Do you have three reasons there for externalizing?
The tendencies.
Yeah. Overvaluing, yes.
Yep, the overvaluing?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, great. I don't have your crib notes in front of me. So you can read those yourself. I mean, they're pretty clear, and you can probably think of others that you can add to that very easily. So let's talk about for a moment just why do we externalize? It doesn't do us any good, and in fact it may cause some serious harm to our relationships with others when we externalize. Here are a few reasons why it's not a good thing to externalize. Being unable to see things from another person's point of view. Finding it much easier to spot someone else's faults than our own. Not wanting to feel the discomfort of facing our own faults. That's huge.
Yeah.
And tending to be attracted to people who will reinforce our externalizing. Do you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They tend to be people who flock together, right? They tend to be. We might moan to someone, and that person moans back to us, and we tend to just flock together.
Yeah.
So another tendency we'll talk for a moment just is avoidance. A passive tendency, avoidance, of tough relationship issues means not having to face them or deal with them. So you may have to discuss that with a client. Oftentimes you do. Maybe not often. It might not be something that will come up often, but you usually will find some areas of avoidance with a client. So a typical scenario would be when someone does or says something that causes us to experience some strong negative feelings or emotions. So these would be anger, frustration, embarrassment, humiliation, and disappointment. Rather than assertively dealing with the issue, we stay quiet and upset for hours, sometimes days, sometimes weeks. We replay that scene again over and over in our minds, and we sort of sustain our angry feelings as we do that. We sustain the intensity of those feelings. And then when we do decide to talk about it, if we ever do, it usually comes out rather harshly, but oftentimes what happens is the person ends up just harboring it and storing it, and it comes out probably in the wrong place eventually.
Yeah, like disease.
Like disease, absolutely. So we're going to pop down just a little bit further because I don't want to keep you too much longer. You can read these yourself in your lecture notes, which I'll send you. But we've gone through the majority of the things that you will discuss with a client if need be. So let's just talk for just a moment, if you don't mind staying on the line with me, about action versus reaction. Reaction is either passive or aggressive. We choose to avoid or confront as our reaction to something. Action is assertive. It means making the first move, initiating a situation, and or taking control. So too many of us, you'll find, often react passively, waiting for someone else to act. So here are some examples of that. We apologize. We do hand-holding. We want someone to do something for us. Making the first move. Tending to be forgiving all the time of the other person's actions or words. Offering to do something for the other person as making up for the situation. And changing their mind. We're hoping they're going to change their mind. We're just going to be passive and hope they come around. So assertiveness is actually taking your power into your own hands and doing something for yourself. So in summary, we can say this. Assertive behavior needs to be learned by most of us. It doesn't come just because we're here on Earth. It's something we need to learn. Your client will need to learn different types of behavior to replace old habits to get where they wish to go. All habits can be unlearned over time. We must remind the client all habits can be unlearned so that new habits can be learned to take their place. They have to know there's a way through the mist. They have to know there's an outcome. And that by putting some ground roots down and doing some good old-fashioned hard work, their old habits can be turned around. So to be clear in their aims and objectives, clients should be encouraged to write down the following lists in order to have direction to which they can assert themselves. So if they're not in your crib notes, please write these down. So here is a list that they can make for themselves. I want to achieve dot, 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 whatever it be. I want dot, 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 whatever it be, from my relationships. I want to learn dot, 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 whatever it is. I want to visit dot, 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 whatever it is. I want to make dot, 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 whatever it is. I want to own dot, dot, dot. And I want to work as dot, dot, dot. So the client may have their own individual desires, of course, to add to this list. But the role of you as a coach is to incorporate some time management and priority skills into these ambitions, producing a clear path of progress that can be assertively followed by your client. So dealing with the assertiveness and the aggression as you move through from client to client will become easier. I challenge you that your first few may seem a little difficult because you may not know the road, but it will become easier and easier as you work with clients. You can make working with assertiveness as part of your regular coach training. Just bring it into every coaching situation that you have, that at somewhere along the lines, even if you think to some degree that the client may not necessarily need any assertiveness coaching to reduce the aggressive behaviors, you might want to touch on it just so that it's something they become aware of. So as personal exercises, there is no additional reading for this, but as personal exercises, we just offer this to you, that you make notes as to why it is important to be assertive. Make a note for yourself. Do a little bit of writing for yourself. Why is it important for you, yourself, to be assertive? List 5 of our fundamental rights. And to write just briefly on body language, how you perceive body language plays in your interaction with others, what you take in when you're looking at others, sort of evaluating their body language. We just sort of encourage you to sort of do that as a growth exercise and see what comes of it for yourself. And anything, of course, that comes of that, please share it with us on the message board. Are you all using the message board?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a few of you I don't see there very regularly. Please try to step in there and just try to use it. Throw some things around. If you would like to see some other topics up there, we'd be glad to put them up for you. Please just email me, clo@expresscoaching.net, and I'd be glad to do that for you. I hope you enjoyed this discussion on assertiveness coaching or assertiveness training. I think that as you go over the notes after I send them to you, I think that you'll be able to see that they will be beneficial as you begin to work with different clients and work on assertiveness training as you're working with clients on general issues. Everyone comfortable with tonight's discussion?
Yes.
Excellent. So I will let you go. I'm sorry we've taken you a little bit past the hour, but I've totally enjoyed your ideas today. As usual, you always come in with some great thoughts. I appreciate that. Thank you for attending. Again, you will be able to leave messages for us on the message board or email me personally if you have any concerns or ideas or things you want to share. I'm always happy to hear from you.
Thank you.
I look forward to talking with you all again next week at the same time, and our topic, I believe, is going to be practice makes perfect. You got to love that.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.